Hello and welcome to episode 20 of Chips of Chorlton.
Don't get so sentimental, mate.
20 episodes. I'm Neil, and as ever, I am joined by Robin.
You're right.
By Andy.
Hello.
And by Duncan.
Hello.
Hello. And we have super guest, we're going to call you this week, from Seminole. Manchester band, everything.
Elbow.
Jonathan Higgs, thank you very much, mate, for coming on.
Thank you for having me, sirs.
So what have you been up to, Jonathan? What's going on?
I've been writing songs. Yeah, spent a long time doing that now.
Yeah.
Still writing some.
How many have you written for the next record at the moment?
About 20, so that's total bollocks. Probably realistically got about 10 now, but we're going to do at least twice that. I mean 10 good ones, yeah. Like 15 shit ones.
I remember seeing a fact that Gary Lightbody, Snow Patrol, said about his albums where he said like, oh yeah, well, we need 40 good songs to pick from and then bring that down to 10. I just remember thinking like, they can't all be good songs, surely.
Well,
if they were, it would be like a double album then, wouldn't it? Or something like that.
Yes, well, I mean,
I don't know,
like, that's all the rage now, isn't it?
Yeah.
...
But
or maybe doing 5 EPs is all the rage now.
Oh, yeah. That's one way.
Or a triple album is also on the cards.
Do you remember when we decided to stand out in the market back in 2005 and we would go to, like, see Maximum Park or Block Party... Porty. do an in-store at like Piccadilly Records, and then we'd show up with remember we had those EP.
Oh.
We had those demos, those EP demos made that were business card shaped.
Yeah.
Oh god, it was so cringy, wasn't it?
What?
Just like, so you go get your 7-inch signed and then just give them that, like, oh, by the way, here's our business card. You can play it in the van. Kind of thing. It's like,
well, how?
But the thing is, like, you couldn't play it in a van.
Oh, you couldn't play it in a van because you couldn't push it in.
Yeah.
What? No, it worked like a
piece of paper.
No,
it was a CD. It was a CD in the shape of a business card.
Oh,
so you could put it on one of those, like, the spindle things.
You know, where you sort of like shove the CD into like the little sort of,
like, on the front of PC Gamer, you would get like those mini CDs with like two demos on.
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
Well, like 8 demos on.
Yeah. So we handed out loads of them to our heroes and no results. I'm sure it helped with flinging it out of the van.
The EP launch.
Yeah, the EP launch.
We've flung a few CDs.
we have.
I distinctly remember, because we still do, but we always used to get given CDs everywhere we went. Just like, if we went to see the label or went to see whoever, they'd be like, oh, there's the new fucking album by whoever we don't give a shit about.
Yeah.
And just give us loads and we'd leave with them. And I remember we were taking a ferry somewhere and I had this Stereophonics album from, like, I don't know, maybe 2015-ish, and sort of went out onto the deck and did like a review of it, which was like me videoing my hands. And I just sort of took it out and obviously just...
Oh man,
I bet it was great though. I should have listened to that.
Imagine what it would be like now if someone came up to you like, here's my demo CD.
Well, that's
like,
what's weird, isn't it,
now, like, in 2019,
what's wrong with you?
Jesus Christ.
Do you think it gave you a little bit more satisfaction back in the day knowing that the band that you really like had something physical that you'd given them?
Yeah.
Like, if you just give them a link to whatever
this,
now,
we,
then
we
it's,
do we do always listen to them, to be honest. And some of them are really good, but
The other thing as well, of course, if you find yourself kind of stricken to the toilet circuit, is that you do end up kind of getting sort of like bands who, like, you know, who you've sort of influenced or inspired. As soon as you announce a tour, like, if it's a gig that they can get on, they'll get on there before you've even got a chance to kind of even sort,
like,
of approve
it. At all,
you know, because usually, you know, you might pick touring support if there's the budget for it, or you will start to look at more regional, local things. But then as soon as you announce a tour, it's like we'd start getting a few sort of people sliding into the DMs, as it would be now.
Oh,
saying, by the way, guys, we're first on with you.
Support.
I'd be like, really? Because I didn't even know we'd announced that tour yet. Where the fuck's this?
Honestly, like, some of the most interactions we've got off announcing a tour are people tweeting saying, can we support you?
Yeah.
And like, and no one buying tickets, but of bands.
You don't get through a Wednesday, rainy night, Wednesday in... Pick a place, Rob.
Norwich.
Very good. You don't get through a Wednesday, rainy night in Norwich just kind of going, well, I'm sure the support bands will perk us up. It never happens. Sometimes it does. But
sometimes
then
it does.
I don't mean any of this to sound toxic.
Some of my favourite musical memories have been when you just watch a band and you don't have any expectations and you're just like, this will probably be shit. And then you watch it and it's like, what the hell is this?
Yeah.
Yeah, so how does it work with new EE tunes? As they're like a million ideas that slowly get filtered down into something that forms an album.
Yeah, we're just sort of throwing stuff out at the moment. Me and Alex will write something separately and throw it to each other, and I'll put a vocal in it, or he'll destroy what I've done. That's the kind of the dichotomy. Or we'll write something together from scratch. And then when we think it's good enough, we'll show it to the other guys. Yeah. And then when they think it's good enough, we'll show it to the manager.
Yeah, yeah.
But he just likes everything, so whatever.
Is that a good thing?
No, he doesn't really. He likes singles and things like that.
He likes singles.
He's a manager.
He loves,
He likes...
You know what I like? Singles.
Yeah. He likes singles.
This might shock you.
Yeah. Exactly. So yeah, it's just, it's kind of like a... I've been working with a big concept in mind that I'm trying to translate into music, but it's not very musical in of a concept, but it's really sort of proggy and ridiculous.
Well, I was going to say, you previously made albums about joining ISIS and things of that nature.
Yeah, I have.
So is this one about...
This is not as political in terms of that.
In terms of its directiveness.
Yeah, like, but it's probably more... out there in terms of a concept, but I don't want to say what it is, which is why I'm being cagey.
Don't say what it is.
But it's going to kind of tie in, I think, I hope, to one of our previous albums. I think maybe.
Oh, yeah. that's
reaching the legacy, reaching the legacy era of your material.
Just going back to the good one, mate.
We've been trying to do that.
Well, so I remember we discussed the concepts for an album, and I think after a while it just became obvious that the concept for Out of Touch in the Wild was marimbas, and that was pretty much it.
In the wild.
Wood, trees.
I remember there was it felt more sort of poignant at the time, but no, it's just marimbas really.
Yeah, it was a bit of a... It was an odd one, wasn't it? The first song was Threads. You sent me that. I was like, fuck me, this is really... Yeah, I was going to say, this is really oriental, where it's in its demo sound, certainly. Yeah. So I started kind of just looking up bamboo and things like that. Kind of iconography... Iconography as such. And came across a term... a bamboo casket. Which I believe was something that the Hollywood actor David Carradine had been buried in after he died from asphyxiation. So that's how that song ended up becoming about asphyxiation, erotic asphyxiation, which is where the whole concept for the album
you start to die. Give up on the wank.
Or write an album.
There you go.
And then, but that was where the general theme for addiction throughout that album came from.
Yeah, yeah, it makes sense.
And I was really annoyed. I mean, not overly annoyed, but Flexin was in the middle in the end for convention's sake, because if you people still buy albums on vinyl, got to have a big song like track, side two, number one, don't you? Your track six got to be a banger. But I wanted Flexin to end the album because it was supposed to be kind of like salvation of addiction changes from one thing to another. And that song's supposed to be Prince singing Venus in Furs, like talking about like kind of just getting into all the heavy bondage shit. Right. But kind of elated by it because been so weird beforehand.
That's always a problem. I've written songs that I wanted to come later than others and stuff like that for more high concept albums. And then when it comes to it, you kind of have to go with how best the album's going to play. Mm. So if you want to have like a narrative, it's all kind of jumbled up before you even start. So I've kind of learned that you can't have a strict narrative.
Yeah, I was just going to say, so on Big Balloon, the whole running order changed 3 or 4 times. And you just basically top-heavied the good song or Big Balloon.
Big Balloon was the first example of certainly the rest of you guys kind of allowing me to have a bit more say in like the direction of like the track list as it should work, like songs going off each other. But then I only wanted 9 songs on Big Balloon because I didn't think Overton was going to work. It was kind of its own separate piece. So then I remember trying to come to like a sort of conclusion with you guys, like, okay, right, well, it can be on there, but it has to be last. And on the track list, can we just sort of have a space before, so it's like the songs, a space, and then the 10th song.
We're always thinking of ways like that.
So people know it's a bit of a prologue or something.
Then they just throw it on Spotify with all the extra tracks stuck on the end of it anyway. And just like what was the point in that?
Your deluxe editions, when they come out straight away, it's like, fuck me, there's another 20-track album. It's like, no, I don't know where, like, I forget where it finished.
I know. But then people like all the songs, and we're like, you're not meant to like those ones, you idiots. Like, you can't blame them for liking the tunes. But
is that the label's choice, though, to kind of put it?
Well, it's just the fact that you're making something and then you're giving it to 16 different companies to put on their format. And it's like, Spotify doesn't care.
That's true.
Yep. There's a line there on the back of the CD or whatever, you know.
Yeah. In the future, like, to make sure it doesn't happen on the next album, just kind of have, like, at the end of the song, just go... End of album.
Isn't it obvious? This one's kind of endy.
It's a bit endy.
It's finished.
This next one sounds like it was recorded by us in our fucking bedroom.
Start doing your shout outs, start doing your thank yous. We'd like to thank so and so.
God.
The Pritchard family, the Hicks family.
God.
Jeremy's been playing with Falls.
He has.
And you have a show coming up soon, don't you?
We do.
So who's playing bass?
Bob and Stan.
Yeah, go on, Rob.
Yes.
How you finding it?
Good. Yeah, it's you know.
You looking forward to that sleeper bus?
All the mod cons.
First time.
In ear monitors and text.
Scotch eggs under the pillow.
Been really enjoying it. Yeah.
Yep.
They're pretty fun bass lines to play.
It's been a pleasure having Rob around.
Oh, thanks, mate.
I heard that you said to Rob that he played one of the songs, Schooling, better than Jeremy.
Was it that one?
In front of Jeremy.
Jeremy wasn't there. If he's listening now,
Jez. it wasn't the
big riff at the end that I wrote, by the way. It was the did-a-little-do-do bit or something, or the choruses or something.
Sort of the second half of the chorus.
No, that's cough, cough, so what the fuck am I... I don't know. Listen back to the song. Robin's got that bit down.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well done.
Good. So it's a really big show as well, isn't it? Is it on Saturday you're playing, is it? Or Sunday?
Saturday. Don't ask me. Saturday.
Saturday.
Right. Yeah. Same time as Stereophonics, so, you know.
Yeah. Maybe they'll review your CD at the same time. Well,
they can find it.
We were listening to a podcast. I don't know why it's
We were listening to the podcast.
We were listening to the podcast.
Right, you know what?
Sumptuous Nazi feast in front of us.
More about the sumptuous Nazi feast
supper,
later.
Sorry.
Yeah. Hold on a minute. No. There's too many things all at once. Hold on. What? No, because he's got a husky voice like Rod Stewart. And that's where my brain was going.
Hey, I listened to the CD. It was shite.
This podcast, and some guy said he threw our CD on my body.
I was watching.
The CD was shite.
Oh, he was shite. Apparently, they're in that tent over there.
Okay, so last time we were recording, Glastonbury was on in the background, wasn't it? I think it was Sunday night. The Cure had just started or something. And since this has been this amazing story with Alex Mann, it's gone absolutely bonkers. Sort of on telly with Piers Morgan and stuff.
Hashtag
like that.
Alex.
Hashtag Alex. He's going to get record deals and management, all that sort of stuff. It's a bit silly, really. It's a bit silly.
It's not guaranteed yet, but I did see an article by Roisin O'Connor on The Independent, talking about how apparently labels and management were starting to kind of swirl around him. Circle him. Swirl. Sorry.
Swirl.
Oh, I can't get the Stereophonics
like
accent out of my head. Yeah. That thing was very much happening. So she kind of felt it necessary to go, can we just all kind of highlight the hypocrisy of this whole stunt? The fact that AJ Tracy, the rapper whose part he was covering, he was on Victoria Derbyshire, basically being confronted about how his videos promote gang violence. He's not celebrated for writing this music, whereas Alex can come on, do the ultimate karaoke set. You got to sort of applaud him for not completely crumbling in front of those numbers at the other stage. It is impressive. But at the same time, it's like, why? What, you know, like, how are they just allowing this to sort of be basically the shining example of this music, whereas the people who actually make this music, they wouldn't get on Good Morning Britain.
Yeah, because it's things white, like that.
And I also think, and unfortunately, I mean, I know he's young, and obviously he's just going to go, you know what, fuck it, it's a mad life, might as well go for it. You know, you get these chances, you probably should.
Well, yeah. All they're looking for is like a little flash in the pan while everyone's talking about it. Can they capitalise on it? Yes, no.
Well, I was going
to say... Because what does it cost them to sort of sign, in inverted commas, him? And manage him. Just basically, can you do this over this track, or can you appear here, or can you go on Love Island, whatever the fuck, not actually on it, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Can you just put in some appearances and just quickly make a quick buck? Maybe you'll do all right, but
maybe get one single out.
No one really is going to care about you very much.
But they could couple a single together relatively quickly and just put it out.
Exactly. It's just while it's hot, isn't it? It's like the woman that pushed the cat in the bin or whatever. It's like, everyone talks about that for like 2 weeks. If she'd put a single out at the time, she could have done pretty well.
What would that have sounded like?
I'm not just saying this because you're in our presence here, John, but bizarrely, it made me think, like, God, imagine if he actually tried to make a rap career out of this. It's not going to come out the way he thinks it is. He's going to end up beating basically another Honey G.
Well, the name that came to my mind actually was Lil Chris.
And
obviously, it's very tragic his story, but he wasn't obviously really old enough for
the fame.
Did you ever watch that show?
I did.
Simmons School of
Rock? I saw that episode. I actually cried. I think I was quite drunk or whatever. But it made me, just the whole thing about having a dream and achieving it, I don't know, hit me right in the feels. And to see what happened next actually really upset me as well, because obviously he's committed suicide.
Yeah.
It's like, but he obviously wasn't ready for it, and it was a type of fame that was sort of couched in sort of, this is a bit, it's reality TV, and it's all a bit kind of stupid, and kind of no one takes it seriously, and it can be so dangerous, that stuff.
But it reminded me of Honey G, and you went to...
Yeah, I saw Honey G live.
Sorry, I just keep thinking of Honey Boo Boo when you say Honey G, but yeah, it's very different.
It's not that different.
Well, no, were you not at some school?
When I first went to uni,
yeah.
So 2000 and... I'm not as old as I am, .com. she was there. She was just leaving uni. Mm. She was in the final year, and I was in... freshman year. And I went to the PAV, which is the Salford Pavilion night spot, which is obviously shite. And they had this night on literally the first night I was there, and there were two female rappers rapping away. And I was like from, you know, rural Northumberland. I'd never even seen a woman before. let alone one rapping. And I was like, what the hell is this? This is cool. And this is new and cool. And one of them was Honey G. And she was, she didn't look like she looks now.
Yeah.
And she was perfectly legitimate as far as my 18-year-old farming ass brain was concerned. It was just like, okay, yeah, cool. She's doing the rapping.
Yeah.
It was probably cheesy and shit then, but I didn't know better. And she was obviously younger and obviously cooler. And
take you under her wing, did she?
No, I didn't talk to her or anything. Oh, okay. I tried to recruit this girl who was an incredible drummer, actually, in the PAV later on. Mm. She was like this metal drummer. And I went up to her and I said, do you want to join my band? And she was like, yeah, totally. And then I never did anything with it. But I probably would have started a completely different band if that had come to my head then.
Yeah, it would have
been like a sort of shit metal band instead of a shit whatever the hell band we are.
I was going to say, aside from that, did you watch any of Glastow on your time off?
I avoided it completely.
Oh, okay.
A sort of mixture of jealousy and fear of missing out, whatever it is. Just generally kind of every time I saw bits of it, I thought, oh, God, I wish I was playing it, or, oh, I'm not there.
Yeah, you start to see all the little nooks, and you kind of go like,
oh, cool, there's Foles doing really well, and there's Jez. So yeah, I did finally watch on. I was like, oh, right, that looks fun.
Yeah.
Just get back to writing this song here in Manchester in the rain.
Yeah.
Jez will play this one day. he'll enjoy that.
But he's not around now.
Yeah, and it was like a review of the whole thing, which was lucky. So I do feel like I got a general sense of it. I love Christine and the Queens.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It was great. It was just one song, but it looked amazing. And I thought Janet Jackson was quite funny as well.
In what respect?
Well, she just did like a completely straight-faced, like 90s, like 1991 kind
it
of
it sounded
set.
Bonkers. Yeah, my iPlayer was acting up. Like, I had
all
to, like,
the moves,
listen to it, like, radio.
All the looks, all the tunes, obviously.
Yeah.
It was just like, whoa, this is so fucking retro. I'm just doing it like completely in at the age she is now.
Yeah.
Just like, just went for it. It was actually really good. It was crazy, actually. I was watching it, and it was Janelle Monáe, Janet, and Christine, and maybe one other thing. And basically, between the lot of them, it was essentially I was listening to Prince and Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Again and again and again and again. I was like, they're both dead now, and I'm still, but their influence is so strong. Like, Christine Queens is basically Michael Jackson on a good day, or she draws heavily from it on her newest record,
particularly the recent record.
Janet, obviously, has every excuse to sound like him, and then Janelle Monáe was exactly the same as Prince. Yeah.
I got Lauren Laverne always plays Kiss straight after that Janelle Monáe single.
Yeah.
Like, every time it's like, oh yeah.
Noel Gallagher come out saying about, again, the work's done because we're talking about it, which really fucks me off. I'd rather never mention his name again. But he's come out and called Lewis Capaldi fucking Chewbacca, saying I hope he enjoys his 15 minutes of fame. Which, and then he also came out and said he told Liam Gallagher to go fuck himself about using Oasis material in the Liam film. And it's just like, this question I was going to have to you about this, John, was like, how do you feel about that? Basically, the Gallaghers are still pretty much the face of Manchester music in a lot of respects, and it does, like, they are the most sort of pop based geographical kind of elements going on around here.
Yeah.
However, we're a Manchester band. You're a Manchester band. Do you identify everything as being a Manchester or a Northern band? And how do you feel about sort of there is that association of coming from the same place as a person like Noel?
I mean, things like what he's done with Lewis Capaldi, like he knows exactly what will generate headlines.
We see.
I don't think he genuinely thinks anything about the kid, other than asked, this really, is just right? Like, I can say this thing, people will print it. He doesn't really care. It's quite knowing, I think. That, I mean, he's been doing it for 20 years.
Isn't it? But is it not getting just a bit sad now that it's the same tactic for 20 years? It's essentially...
What's sad is that we're lapping it up and no one's stepped in to take his place.
No one's stepped in to go, this is about as predictable as WWE now. Actually, that's not to...
Well, that's not his fault. He's a one-trick pony at best anyway, in terms of everything he does. And it's a good trick.
Yeah, it is. And he's become very successful from doing it.
Yeah.
So why would he stop doing it now? You know?
Well, I'm not sure he has the capacity to, or the inclination. Like, it's just like, I'll talk shit. That's what I do.
So
you
shit.
Guys seem to like it.
Yeah. But it's just sad. Like,
there's a tune on his new record where he's, during the opening seconds, he kind of goes, boom chicky pow. He literally like sings like a fill like that, like he's a sort of like dad from the sort of 1830s.
Sort of, like almost Partridge, isn't it?
It's beyond Partridge. I don't even know how to describe it. It's like no one would do that ever on anyone's album, but he's done it on his own album, and it's this kind of album where it's meant to be like, I'm branching out a little. Like, you know, he's supposed to be
like, I've discovered the Beatles had the White Album. Like, this is it now. Like,
you ever heard of Revolver? Yeah.
I heard of Sergeant Peppers.
I don't know. It just really saddens me, though, because like, there's still going to be such a majority class, not class, but a majority of people in this city that are still going to just love that and lap that up. And it just gives me no hope for this city that it's ever going to sort of just stop that shit.
Well, you're not
for a couple of years.
Liverpool, and they're still beating the Beatles drum.
Yeah, of course. It's gonna happen for.
It will until something bigger than it.
Yeah.
And even then, it won't.
Yeah.
No, it was still,
I mean, I don't think Manchester's even close to where Liverpool is with the Beatles as well. I mean, it's not that reliant upon Oasis for tourism. That it will do that eventually. Yeah, but there'll be a fucking Oasis.
If they get back together,
museum. Yeah, exactly.
I'm sure it will, and that'll be justified. It will through the beginning of their legacy. Certainly, I just wish we could stop going around this same fucking cycle every 2 years. All we're doing is putting money in these people's pockets. Like, they don't need this. Like, this is just getting a bit stupid. I'm not saying, like, people should take that money and invest it in other bands. I'm just saying, can we just fucking stop the trash?
No, they should. They should give it
to us. Well, yeah, they should. Yeah, yeah. Well, obviously they should.
We're just at an
awkward
time.
But I can't come out and say that, because then people are just going to...
Yeah. We're at the end of an empire, and it's like, this is the fall. This is after the fall of Oasis, and it's just this sort of awkward period where we kind of, they're still massive in the consciousness.
But as if they're not going to get back together for that final payout.
But it obviously won't be doing anything like what they did when they started, or we won't view it that way, regardless of what it is. But right now, we're just in this really awkward bit where it's kind of, Oasis, we think they're shit now, but we kind of don't, and they're still really annoying, but they're sort of still around and relevant enough to people to listen to them, and give it another 20 years and we'll probably be fine with it. Sorry, mate.
just wait till the year. Then you'll be Noel's age and you'll be...
Yeah, you know, our kids will think they're either... No, they'll just think they're shit, won't they?
Yeah,
we'll brainwash them anyway. Into,
yeah. Yeah, well, yeah. They're going to be listening to some fucking awful music in my house.
Stupid fucking questions, that.
Oh, that's a good one, that, Dunk.
Thanks.
That's a really good one.
Yeah.
So we're, unfortunately, we're in the middle of some sort of Twitter outage, if you like. So Twitter's gone down. All those questions that everyone tweeted in, sorry, but we just can't fucking see them, can we?
So we're just going to try and remember some of them and ask them now. Yeah.
Musically.
Music ones.
Generally, a lot of people were asking, how's the new album looking?
We've got lots of songs so far. Lyrically, it's coming along. There's a big concept, like I said. It's sort of based on something that I read recently or heard about. It was a podcast, actually.
There we go.
And
chip related.
They probably covered chips at some point, but this one was amazing. And then I just did loads of reading about it and thought, this has got to be... this is terrible because I can't say what it is, isn't it? It's just boring bollocks, isn't it? Yeah. So anyway, musically, it's going really well.
Are there any titles you could throw out there, or any kind of any kind of sweet explosive caveats?
Well, I named a song Slender Man today.
Ooh, okay. Nice.
But it probably will change.
Like, is that a reference to the film?
It's a film. Come on.
Is there a film?
There's a film now. Yeah. But there's a long time. Well, not that long. Urban myth, and he's a boogeyman for the sort of sub-millennial preteens.
Sort of appears in the background of pictures or whatever, and his tentacles come out of his back, and he gets you basically, and he's kind of a bit sort of X-Files-y, but he's interesting to me. I mean, I love how those kind of things appear anyway in the consciousness.
Sticking with films and things of that nature, another question was, do you have a favourite animated film feature? Which I know is obviously... It's not the usual kind of question we usually get on stupid fucking questions, but...
Probably Akira or one of the good... what's the really obvious guy that fucking everyone loves?
Oh, well, Ghibli.
Yeah. Just one of his good ones. I used to have a Japanese girlfriend when I was at uni, and she gave me a good education in... anime. Well, not actually. She didn't actually. Because anime
is
like... You
sound a bit pissed off about this.
Well, no, because I've come to learn that anime is actually a sort of endless, sort of, like, not very well-made sort of serial of just, like, just fucking endless story and cast... Not cast off, but, you know, like, really, like, thrown out their stuff again and again and again. Whereas I saw the very well-made... films that were a complete thing, and I'm sure you couldn't animate serialized anime in that same way, but I'm so ignorant about it, and it's what all the kids love nowadays, and I just don't have a fucking clue what it's about.
Okay, well, another question, which is kind of along these lines, somebody did ask, do you prepare or do you have all your drafts drafted tweets for because your output on
social media
is actually
socials
on the socials, mate.
You're output look after your socials.
Your output on the socials is remarkably abstract yet kind of
consistent.
It's kind of consistent in its message
it's known as shit posting.
Right, okay. how does it come to form? And also the whole the kind of the ongoing end off tweets.
Yeah, I get stuck in little loops. Basically, I find social media really frustrating, and mostly my emotion, same as anyone, is anger or rage or just general distaste with everyone I encounter. Basically. I'm sick. I basically only follow comedians now. I think because I started following Accidental Partridge because it's hilarious, and Limmy because he's funny.
Yeah,
I get given comedians by Twitter, so I get to see the output of comedians, and that's kind of kept me okay for quite a while because they tend to all be trying to be funny every day, which is actually kind of depressing, amazingly, because you sort of the desperation starts to sneak in after a while.
You say impressing,
depressing. Oh, yeah, because you just sort of see like what's David Baddiel going to... How's he going to try and roll this one? Yeah. Who's going to step in here? Like, generally...
What's Danny Baker going to do to... Oh, fuck.
Oh, shit. Yeah. But generally, that's quite amusing. However...
Comedians, Rob.
Even that, after a while, is just starting just like... It's the same old... Watching someone's opinion sort of stay static and be trotted out again and again and again. It doesn't really matter what their view is. It just makes me angry and sort of... The whole kind of static nature of it and the sort of bubble effect and the fact that it's just this... The whole nature of Twitter is this sort of bleating out into the fog, and it isn't about discourse and it isn't about... It's all about brevity and like machine gun of like, here you are. This is what I think. And it's just sort of this horrible like... Yeah. Cacophony of shit and no one listening to each other, and then people kind of like jumping on the bandwagon and kind of go, oh, I agree with this, and all the likes kind of building up, and I just fucking hate it all, basically. I hate myself when I use it, and I've slowly found the only thing that gives me any pleasure, don't ask me why I'm using it at all, I just am, is to just put up stuff that I find funny or totally fucking ridiculous. And or just completely the opposite of what I really think, because it amuses me when people might believe it for a few seconds, and then someone sort of gets the joke or doesn't get the joke, and either way I'm just like, oh, fuck off, I can't be arsed with you either, you know, just the whole I just have a very negative view of the whole thing, probably because I've been using the internet for too many years. But it's kind of a bit like my appreciation of art in general. Like when I was a young man full of dreams, I thought that, like, you know, highly abstract art was great, and I kind of got into it, and kind of, you know, I was just like, I would watch all the French films and all the paintings of bollocks, and kind of go,
it's all about the notes they're not playing, kind
exactly.
Of thing.
And I got into all of that, and then I kind of reached the end of that, and I was like, what the hell do I do now? I've kind of seen through that now, and it's like I've kind of reached the end of my appreciation of art, full stop. And then I would only really prick my ears up if something amused me. That was like the only thing left. So like Damien Hirst, like I don't really rate him as an artist, but I thought the shark was funny. That's funny.
Yeah, the formaldehyde.
Yeah, that's just funny. I don't give a fuck what he's trying to say. That's amused me today. And the skull covered in diamonds, it's like, that's just absurd and funny. Like, I'll take notice of that.
Well, I always thought an element of that art was kind of like, you almost think, is he kind of coming up with constructs to kind of go, imagine somebody buying this and having it in their house. Like, what would this sliced up shark look like in somebody's fucking living room? Like, where does that come from? Like,
that actually arouses me on a like artistic level, whereas like, you know, some conceptual thing doesn't really, although that is obviously entirely conceptual, which is the rub, but... Yeah, so I've come to just use most social media as like just a load of shit, and most of the time I'm laughing at anyone who encounters it, even if they like it, even if they're exactly the same as me and say, haha, this is funny, I'm still thinking,
you're a fucking idiot.
And then I deleted about 10 minutes later.
Well, in regards to that reaction, especially when it's things that are kind of Brexit sort of, you know, these absurd kind of Brexit monologues that kind of come out about the, like, you know, leave one, end off kind of thing.
Yeah.
All that stuff. Do you find yourself getting an adverse reaction from other people that don't, either don't get it, or that people are just kind of going like, are you hating on leavers and stuff like that? Like, do you worry about the political... I don't really care
because I think I've set myself up in such an absurd way that it's never going to really backfire on me badly, I don't think. I mean, and I am careful not to ever actually be... I'm actually very aware of not being a cunt.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not saying you are stupid or anything, any of the isms, or, you know, I could play a role, but I actually take care not to do that. And I don't write misspellings because I'm stupid. I write them because I've written them in anger, you know, and the misspellings are close on the keyboard, and I've thrashed the keyboard. I haven't gone, oh, I'm dumb and uneducated, and written the wrong spelling for your or whatever, because I think that's not funny or to be laughed at, someone being badly educated or whatever. So yeah, I am sort of still kind of anal about looking like I don't care, which is not the point of it, but you've got to be careful, I think, because there's a fine line between pretending to be a twat and just being a twat.
For what it's worth, and not just to suck up to it, but I think it's the most refreshing angle that a musician can,
it's sort all like, I've
so, someone in our position, someone in our position can really take on it.
Yeah,
so hats off to you on that.
You
really
said about my drafts folder before, and there is some stupid shit in here.
You're not going to give away some nuggets here, right?
Well, Daniel Craig comes up a lot.
Daniel Craig.
Obviously, end offs there, but those are kind of old now. Yeah, Cole Sprouse. I thought he had a funny name. No one seemed to get it. something about Cliff Richard's new album. The true spelling of woe. Several stories about Bono, which I'm just afraid to put up. Speak
that.
Spanish and vanish, hombre.
I remember that website,
got to find the context.
It'll happen.
Generally, I find myself consuming like the crappiest stuff out there, like the shittest music, or I peruse the accounts of the stupidest or most ignorant or most ridiculous people there are.
Yeah.
Like I'll go to like someone like Katie Hopkins, go through the comments till I find one I think is so fucking dumb. Mm. And obviously she said something stupid to begin with. And then I go into his profile and look at all his shit, and then I'll see him talking with his mates in his world, and then I go into their profiles, and by before I know it, I'm just like, what the...
Yeah, like, where are you?
Absolute fuck am I doing? But yeah, I find myself drawn to that far more than looking at people's pages that I kind of really agree with or really respect. Yeah. Or like, let's go see what Tom York's doing online today.
Yeah.
Like, fuck that. I'm going to go and look at like what Tommy Robinson's doing today. Yeah. I just find myself kind of absurd and all my friends ridiculous, and everyone I know, and this, my lifestyle, kind of not repellent, but worthy of like skewering, and I just don't really have a high, I don't know what it is.
Well, to identify yourself as a songwriter every day is absurd enough, really, isn't it? Like, you know, for, I mean, I don't mean for you or for me, I mean for everyone.
Well, as an artist, it is an absurd thing to think about.
Yeah.
It's hard to go like, what am I going to do, hum over the guitar. Like, it doesn't work like that, does it? It kind of comes out of somewhere else, and you have to find that validation for yourself to make it worthwhile.
Yeah.
In a bizarre way.
I'm always trying to escape who I am in one way or another, in terms of my life and my stuff I'm into. I'm sort of constantly thinking, this is just a load of bollocks, isn't it?
Yeah.
But so is everything else. That's what my problem is. And I sort of hate my own, the people that like follow me. I'm just like, fuck off. What are you doing? And yet I want them to follow me, and I'm happy when more people do. And yet I'm thinking, you know,
but why?
But why are you here? Exactly. Yeah. And that's almost like testing, just pushing it, just like, eat this, you lot. You know, this is a fucking picture of like my dad's dick or whatever. You know, like, leave means leave, like written over the top of it.
Oh my god, I feel like I just broke my esophagus.
not because I think they're going to lap it up, but because the whole thing is amusing to me anyway. Me tweeting something serious sort of amuses me in its absurdity anyway. It's like, who the fuck do I think I am to do anything? And I don't know, I think I'm just so cynical, I've kind of become like a sort of ghost in many ways.
Okay, well, luckily, ghost. Like, okay, you know what? Yeah. Question I was wanted to ask you earlier, but I was a bit kind of too chicken to ask it so early on, because we were talking about sort of like Latitude being such a big gig, yeah, and things of that nature. In regards to like EDM, the American phenomenon, do you feel any, first of all, do you feel any sort of pressure to try and apply your sound to helping break America as a territory for the band? And then secondly, well, no, maybe not that, maybe not that sound specifically, but like,
I shook my head.
But in terms of where the band goes next, do like territories that you would like to sort of break kind of come into that? But then secondly, are there any personal achievements that everything haven't quite got yet that you would like to do in your time in everything? Because yeah, ours is simply get on Jules Holland, and what's the other one? Mercury Prize nomination. But like, you know,
and that's it. Yeah, we can retire.
Yeah, yeah, like, if we get those two things, then we'll never do anything ever again. Like, like basically,
or maybe not even. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. We won't give a shit. Like, we've done Glastonbury. We did Glastonbury. Those are the only two things that stand out for us, yeah, essentially, in terms of like that initial checklist. Mm-hmm. Is there anything on Everything's checklist?
Yeah, of course.
This yet to be ticked.
Number one album.
Yeah, yeah. What, you've been very close.
We've had two number fives, and get to seven.
Get to seven.
Of course,
yeah,
got to number seven. Oh, yes. Famously, you know, everyone knows that. It's a trivia question in pubs across the country. What number did Get to Heaven get to? Yeah. Arguably the best record. I mean, yeah, we'd like to have a number one album. Obviously, I mean, it's not obviously not going to happen, and it's not a biggie, but it'd be nice, wouldn't it? Mm. Be nice to win a Mercury. Two nominations.
Ask Damon Albarn about that.
Well, I was in a room with him a few months ago. Didn't say anything to him.
Really?
Yeah.
What would you have said to him?
It was actually he, Jarvis, and James Dean Bradfield were all in the room, and it was so like Britpop.
Yeah. were you the fourth person? Was it just fourth the four room? Of you?
No, the band was there, and so was Peter Gabriel.
Wow. And,
whoa!
Yeah, Peter Gabriel was sat at our table, and we all said, "Oh, hello, hello." And then it was just this kind of awkward, like, I guess we're done speaking to Peter Gabriel. And I took the opportunity, and I was just like, "Fuck this! I'm not going to get another chance." Yeah. I was like, "Peter, excuse me, I've heard that you once did a sort of half. What's the word when you leave something halfway through it? Anyway." He did this experiment with chimps playing music, and I was like, "Peter, did you do this thing with chimps? Is this true?" And he's like, "Yes, it was. Whoever the fuck you are." and I got into this massive conversation with him about this chimps thing. He started showing me this YouTube video of it, of chimps playing music, and he and a few other people had this thing where they used the internet to like connect animals to like jam. So a chimp would be playing like. Like synth, and then fucking
sounds like a Brian
dolphin
Pern
or whatever. We like doing like a SPDS at the other end, yeah, like drum pad. I mean, quite as ridiculous as I've just made it sound. But there was actually one of the videos was pretty incredible, and Peter Gabriel was playing like this kind of amorphous, like it's not really in any key, and it's like there's no rhythm, but it's just like Brian Eno kind of Apollo type chords.
Yeah,
and then the monkey was just playing any old shit, and obviously all of it worked because he was just hitting the white keys as you would if you were a monkey.
Yeah,
and obviously that was in the key for what he was doing, and it's just like, oh my god, is he
jamming playing with me?
Yeah, yeah, but, yeah. That was that's what it's like though, and it just and it. But there was one bit where it finds an octave and it plays one, you know, plays one note with one hand, then it plays the same note with the other, and it's messing around, and when it finds that, it does actually stay there for a bit, and it plays them, and it seems to know that those are the same note. And that's like one moment of like, okay, the monkey does actually seem to. I'm really sorry if it's an ape or a chimp.
He's
going to
kill us in 5 years.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that was cool. But anyway, that was like, we were backstage at some kind of award. We were giving an award to James Ford for producing our record, even though we kind of produced it. And, no, he did as well. Yeah. But we did as well. And they were all back there.
because they were doing
stuff. Is that the most famous room you think you've kind of been in? Like in terms of intensely...
Well, there was the time where Noel... I was walking across the room to talk to Chris Martin because I had before and I was like, God, I'm going to go and say hello to him. I'm a bit pissed. And on my way there, Noel stopped me and went, have you met Bono? And like sat me down next to Bono.
No.
Yeah, that combo. On the way to Chris Martin, Noel stops me. Have you met Bono? Yeah, that was ridiculous. And I was like,
So we talked about Noel before. So he's a fan.
Yeah.
He's certainly like a, I know you.
He knew who we were and he was friendly enough. Yeah, I think. And he was quite, he wanted to know that we were definitely from Manchester, which of course we aren't.
Yeah, but London,
like,
mate.
You're a Manc band or whatever. Like, you're a Manchester band, aren't you? And we were like, yeah. Well, yeah. I was.
Yeah. Like, for all intents and purposes, yeah, yes.
Yeah. This is where I've made my home and I've been here as long
and
as
And what was Bono
else,
like?
Just like completely inscrutable sort of famous person stuff. He was just like wearing his shades, obviously. I mean, he's got his eye condition, has he? But he's still like a twat. And he was just kind of going, I'm not even going to do his voice. What is it? Yes, it's light outside, but it's dark in here, isn't it? Even though it's light outside.
Is he still wearing his glasses?
Yeah.
His
point? It's like, fuck it. And something else, some other kind of like cod wisdom bollocks. But it just, you know, just like make nice.
I mean, I'm guessing like
he's done it like probably 17,000.
Well, that's
times.
It. Yeah, to the point.
And it's just like who's this little guy? No one wants me to meet.
You
like,
must have fucking
go to
small talk that you just.
Yeah, of course.
So essentially, so that was your Bono talk. It's light outside, but it's dark.
That's the bit I remember. That's pretty good though.
Kind of resonates. A bit like Batman.
Well, it's the kind of thing I'll remember for the rest of my life. Get it put on my gravestone tattoo.